We're on the top of Daf Ayin Zayin Amud Beis, and we're dealing with words that have an aleph or an ayin. Iboilahu, four lines down from the top. Omimos, o omimos. We're talking about coals that are partially extinguished. They're going down. They're on the process. They're still glowing. And should we write the word with an aleph or with an ayin? Omer Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, based on a pasuk in Yechezkel, where the Novi is talking about the majestic cedar trees in Gan Eden. And the pasuk says, Arozim lo amamuhu beGan Eden. The cedars will not dim his splendor. And we're talking about the glory of the Assyrian kingdom in the Garden of Hashem. So the word amamuhu is spelled with an ayin. It means to dim. And so too the extinguished coals that are partially extinguished, when they're dimmed from their previous intensity, we spell it with an ayin. Iboilahu me'amtsin tnan o me'amtsin. We have a Mishnah later on Daf Kuf Nun Aleph, and we're talking about closing the eyes of the deceased person on Shabbos, whether that's allowed, because the corpse is mukti and I'll let him move it, and therefore be forbidden to close the eyes of the corpse. And should we read it ma'amtsu with an aleph or ma'amtsu with an ayin? Omer Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Pasuk in Yeshaya, describing the virtues of the righteous person, the tzaddik, who can defend the Jewish nation and protect us against Zam, against divine wrath. And the Pasuk says, V'otzem enov mir'os ra, he averts his eyes from seeing evil. And since this word V'otzem is spelled with an ayin, meaning to avert the eyes, so too in the Mishnah, ma'amtsin should be spelled with an ayin. Now we get back to our Mishnah, and we spoke about the shear of hotzah for milk. It's the amount you would just swallow. And the Brisa says, Tana Rabbanan ha-motzi cholav shel behema kidei gmiya. If he carries out in Rishus HaRabim the milk of an animal, he's chayev if he has enough to swallow. And cholav shel isha, human milk, loven shel beitza, should be the white of a raw egg. So we're talking about the shear of hotzah of human milk and of the white of a raw egg, kidei litein v'meshifa shel kilar, enough to put into the application of the kilar ointment. And you remember from yesterday that we discussed what this kilar is. So that was the salve that was placed upon the eye, prepared by mixing a dry paste with one of liquids, one of several different kinds of liquids. And the Brisa teaches that human milk was commonly used for this purpose. And he's chayv hotzah of a small quantity, which is enough to mix an application of kilar ointment. And the word beshifa literally means smearing. So the Brisa is teaching us that you're chayv if you take out enough breast milk or egg white to put into a smearing's worth of kilar ointment. And that's called kidei loshuf b'mayim. Boy Rav Ashi, kidei shifa, o kidei achiza v'shifa. Is it enough that you can mix to apply to the eyes, which means enough to hold the kilar in one's fingers and apply therefore on the eyes? And this kilar ointment, which is applied by fingertip, and a certain amount of ointment would cling to the finger after you apply it to your eye. So the Gemara wants to know, is the minimum shear of kilar including that residue that sticks to the fingers, and the Gemara leaves it off with a teiku. Dvash kedei litein al hakosis. The shear of hotzah for dvash, for honey, is enough to place on a sore. Tana the Braisa taught kedei litein al pi kosis, on the head of the sore. What does that mean? Boy Ravashi, al kosis afuma dekula kosis, odilma amursha kama dekosis. When you have the head of the sore, which like rises up above the level of the skin, so do you need enough dvash for the entire sore, or it's enough on the highest point, the tip of the sore? Lafuki hodrona delo. So you don't have to include the area that's around the tip of the sore. That's not included in the shear. So the head of the sore in the braisa means the head of the sore, but not the entire sore. And he's chayev, even if he took out enough honey to apply to the tip of the sore. And once again, the Gemara lets it stand with teiku. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, kol ma shebara kodesh baruch hu ba'olamo, lo bara davar echad levatol. Everything has a purpose. Sometimes we don't see or understand its purpose. Bara shablul lekosis. Shablul is some sort of a snail or a slug, and it's a remedy for a sore. You know, you put this slug on the sore, and it's a remedy. Bar zvuv litzira. If you have the sting of a hornet, that's called a tzira. Whole sugya in Makis about the tzira and how many lavim you'd be chai if you ate it. And now he has his vuv, the fly, which if he crushes it, he can put it on top of the sting of a hornet, and it has a therapeutic effect. Yitush, which is either a mosquito or perhaps a gnat, and it's linochash. You know, if you chasrom got bitten by a snake, then again you could crush this yitush and put it on the snake. Snake bite, I should say. Benachash lechafofis, and a snake could be a cure for boils. Now I'm not sure exactly what that means. Perhaps it means that the dead snake, you know, you somehow crush the snake and you put it on top of a boil. I don't know. Smumis liakrov. This is amazing. The Gemara is saying that a spider is a cure for a scorpion. So you crush the spider, you put it on the sting of the place where you got stung by a scorpion, and that is a remedy. The Gemara says, Hechi Ovidle, how does he affect this cure? Maisi chada akuma vechada chivara. So akuma is black and chivara is white. So he brings a black snake and a white snake. Vishalkuluhu, and he cooks them. I don't know if they're alive or dead, but now for sure they're dead. Vishaifile, and he rubs them on the boil. This mixture has to be rubbed on the boil. Again, I wish anyone luck in trying to catch a black snake or a white snake and then cooking them together. Kolakavod, if you could do that. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a brisa, Chamisha Emoshem. There's certain creatures that although they may seem weak, but yet they instill fear in the hearts of something that's much, much stronger. For example, first case of five, Emas Chalosh Al Gibar. Sometimes the strong is afraid of the weak. Another example is Emas Mafgia Al Ari. It's some sort of a creature called a Mafgia. It's a small creature, but very powerful, and it lets out a scream. And the lion fears that this great beast is coming to challenge him, and the lion actually runs away. According to Ben Yoda, the mafgia is relatively small, but it's an agile animal with razor-sharp claws. It jumps on the head of the lion and kills the lion with its claws. And the lion is actually afraid of this mafgia. Amos Yitush al Apil, imagine a great giant elephant that's afraid of a little gnat. Emas, because what the gnats do, it's able to go into the trunk of the elephant, and that's very painful for the elephant. Emas, smomis al akrav, the fear of the spider is on the scorpion, and the spider enters into the body of the scorpion through its ear, Rashi tells us, and the scorpion is powerless. Emas, snunis al anesher, you have a bird that's called the snunis, in English it's called the swallow, and it enters beneath the wings of the eagle, of the Nesha. Nesha is the most powerful bird, but it prevents the eagle from spreading its wings. And Emas Kilbis al Livyasan, the fear of something called the Kilbis upon the Livyasan. Now the Kilbis is some sort of, again, small, relatively small creature that creeps, and it's able to kill larger fish by burrowing into their ears. So the Leviathan is a great sea creature, and the Kilbis, which is a small creeping creature, is able to kill the great Leviathan. Now why is this brisa brought down here by the Gemara? And it seems that in addition to the medical uses that were mentioned by Rabbi Yehuda, all creatures can be used as instruments of God to exact retribution on the wicked. Even if they appear to be insignificant, relatively small creatures, nevertheless, they are, shall we say, agents of the Almighty. So a person should never arrogantly assume that it's his power. He cannot be punished. God can summon even the smallest of creatures to exact retribution upon him. And if we're thinking about the coronavirus, you know, it's very, very small. Microscopic. Omar of Yehuda Omar Rav. Mikra Hamavlig Shod Al Az. Apostle Amos, the awesome power of Hashem, he who causes the weak to triumph over the powerful. Rabbi Zera Ashkach l'Rabbi Yehuda, Davi Koi Apischa Debei Chamua. So Rabbi Zera encounters Rabbi Yehuda standing at the door of his father-in-law's house. V'chazye Dahavi Bedicha Daite. He saw that Rabbi Yehuda was in a very happy mood, extremely happy. And Iboy Mine Kol Chaloli Alma. He was in the mood that you could ask him anything in the world. Ask him about anything. Havi Amalei, so Rabbi Yehuda would tell him and answer any question that he had. So Rabbi Zeira began to question Rabbi Yehuda with regarding certain natural phenomena that he had observed. Rabbi Zeira knew that Rabbi Yehuda possessed knowledge to shed light on many natural phenomena. If things were normal, he would be inhibited to inquire about seemingly irrelevant matters. But in this case, seeing that Rabbi Yehuda was in a very jovial mood, he grabbed the opportunity to ask all these questions which the Gemara is going to relate. Now, according to the Marsha, all these questions and even the answers that follow these questions are symbolic of spiritual matters, not just mundane matters. Amalei Reb Zera says to Rabbi Yehuda, "My taima easy maskon bereisha. Why is that the goats, or perhaps the male goats, walk in front of the flock? The hadar imre, and then the sheep follow after them. Amalei kibriyasa shel olam. This reflects or mirror images the creation of the world. The bereisha chashocha. First there was darkness, vayerev, and then v'had the horav vayivoker. So the goats, which are dark colored, go before the light-colored sheep." Reb Zera asks, "My taima hani mechasyon, mahani megalion. The sheep, the back of the sheep, are covered by a tail, but the goats, the back of the goats, are exposed, and there's no tail." Reb Yehuda answers, "Hani de mechasinon minayhu, mechasyon. The sheep that cover our bodies, because the wool that we shear off the back of the sheep cover our bodies. and therefore the sheep are covered, the hind parts of the sheep are covered by a tail. Hani deloma chasim inayim, but the goats, we don't cover ourselves with shearings from goats. Actually, the shearing of goats are fit for making sacks, but sacks generally are not used for clothing. We spoke about this when we discussed whether a sack is mekabel tumah, even though it's made from threads of goat hairs. But in any event, since they are not covered, these goats, or shall we say, we don't cover ourselves with the goats, therefore megalion, therefore the goats do not merit covering their tail, their shearings do not serve a higher purpose of clothing man. So the goats are not on the same level as the sheep in this context. My taima gamla zutar gnuvte. A camel has a small tail. Why is that? So Rabbi Yehuda answers, Mishum de ochal kise. Kise are thorns. And sometimes these thorns are given as food for camels. And the short tail is a protection for the camel, so that it's, you know, it doesn't get entangled in thorns. It eats the thorns and it has a short tail. Otherwise, the tail, if it was longer, would get all tangled up in these thorns. Now, Reb Zeri asks, "Am I taima Torah aricha gnuvte?" Torah is an ox, right? Shor, tor, and it has a long tail. Rabbi Yehuda answers, "Vishum de dairi biagme." It lives in the swamplands. Uboy la karshushe baki. It requires a long tail to chase away all these bugs in the marshlands, the gnats, and so forth. So the ox can use its long tail to swap away all these annoying gnats that are so common in the swamplands. My time akarna de kamtsa rechicha, the horns of a locust are soft and flexible. You know, it's hard for me to, you know, get a hold of a locust. I don't know how you look under a magnifying glass and see that it has soft horns. Mishum de daira bechilfa. They dwell amongst the willows that are stiff and unyielding. Vikasha, and if the antenna were rigid, then nadya umis avra. It would be dislodged when the locust strikes the willows, and the locust would then be blinded. So the locust uses its antennae to see, and damaging the antenna would blind it. Tiyomer Shmuel, Haiman de boy de lisme lekamtza. If he wants to blind a locust, lishlofinu lekarne, he should remove its antenna. So we see that a locust depends upon its antenna to see. Rabbi Zevi then asks, "My taima hai timra de sarnagola midle liela." Why is the lower eyelid of a rooster is raised up and it closes the upper eyelid? We don't find that in any other animals. Any other animals, the upper eyelid closes the lower one? This is very strange. The upper eyelid closes the lower eyelid, and here, in the case of a tarnagolas, the lower eyelid raises up and closes the upper eyelid. Rabbi Yehuda answers, the dire adape. It dwells on boards and beams. Smoke is often present in its habitat. And the rooster often sleeps in high places, rising smoke is often present near its roosting place. The eilik torah, and if the smoke would get into its eyes, Miss Avra would become blind. So the lower eyes close the upper eyes, so that the rising smoke cannot penetrate into its eyes. Reb Zera now continues. Dasha. Now at this point, he's asking about certain names of, let's call it, common items. And Rabbi Yehuda tells us that each name is a contracted form of the function or the physical makeup of that item. So, for example, dasha is a door. And why is it called a dasha? Derech sham. So dasha is an otrikin, it's a short form of a derech sham. There's a derech there. Now, the word dasha sounds like derech sham. Dasha reflects the function of a door, derech sham, that's the way you go in. But interesting, the word dasha is Aramaic. Derech sham is Hebrew. So the Marsha notes that the two languages share many, many common words. And Rabbi Yehuda teaches that these Aramaic words are actually derived from contractions of Hebrew words. Darga, a ladder is called a darga, derech gag. It's a way to climb up to a roof. So you enter into the upper stories of a house through ladders. They didn't have fancy staircases like we had. Maskolisa. This is a kind of a sauce that they use for dipping. And why is it called maskolisa? Mosai tichla da. When will this be finished? So sauce takes a long time until you finish, like we spoke about kutach once, right? The dip. So people wonder, when is this going to be finished? How long will it last? Or perhaps when will we eat when the sauce is gone? What will we eat? Besa? Why is the house called Besa? Bo fi esib, but let's come and dwell therein and sit therein. Biksa, which is a cramped house. Be Aksa, narrow, small place. Kufta, why is it called Kufta? It's a mortar. Is kuf vasiv, tip it over and sit. And in they used to use mortar stands. If you turn it over, it could be used as a seat. So one would say to his fellow, tip the mortar over and sit down. Livne are bricks. Livne b'nei. Livne means they endure for one's children's clothing. Livnei b'nei. So there are edifices that are built of bricks and they endure for many generations. Children's children. Hutza. Hutza is a thatched fence. And it's a weak fence. You know, it's constructed of, let's say, palm thorns or palm leaves. Sukkah about hutza that comes down for the sukkah and whether it disturbs your yeshiva. So the answer is chatzitza. So hutza is from the same shorish as the word chatzitza. This offense that is a chatzitza. In other words, it's not permanent and therefore it's a chatzitza. It's called hutza. Chatzba, a barrel is called a chatzba, shechotzev mayim min anor. It mines water from the river. Now, as you draw water from the river, that's called mining. That's a chatzba. Kuza, a small earthen jug. Kazeh, it's tiny like this, meaning this tiny. You know, he probably shows a small measure and he says, give me some of your wine. Give me this small amount. Shusisa. It's a myrtle branch. It's called Shusisa Shistusa. Shistusa is a fool. So you dance before the bride and the groom while holding myrtle branches. This is Gemara and Ksuvis. So this enhances the joy of the couple and the, you know, the rabbis, when they would dance, they would go a little bit wild. Almost look like foolish, almost. There was no concern about their own dignity. Who is it there in Ksubis? Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, I think. Mishikla. Mishikla is a large trough that contains enough water for many people to wash their feet. And that's called Mashai Kula. It washes all. Mashkilsa. This is a washing pitcher. Very ornate and very beautiful. Mashie Kalsa. The bride washes it with it. So it was reserved for the use of a bride for a prominent woman. A sisa, this is already hard mortar, chasirta, from the language of chasirta, chaser, it's lacking. And why is it lacking? The hard mortar was essentially a block of wood, partially hollowed out, and if it was missing the hollowed out portion. And this was used to grind grain. Buchna. What is a pestle? Bo viachna. Come and I will strike it. Because the pestle is used to crush what's called shchika, to crush herbs. Strike the substance. Levusha, that's the outer cloak that a person wears. Lo busha. In other words, there's no embarrassment. You're not embarrassed when you wear it because it covers your clothing. And even if you have tattered clothing, you're not be embarrassed if you covered it with a fine cloak. Glima, an overcoat. Shenasebo kigolam. In other words, one who wears it is made to look like a shapeless form, a golem, because the overcoat was a cape-like garment. It had no sleeves. And it did not hug the body, it just sort of hung over the body. And you couldn't see the body at all. Or the form of the body, I should say. Gulsa. It's a fine cape. Gale viesiv. Reveals himself by folding it up before he sits. In other words, he doesn't want to soil it. It's like the kapota. And he prevents it from being rubbed against the ground. And how does he do that? He reveals himself by folding it before he sits. So he would fold its lower portion around his waist before he sat down. And he reveals his legs as he sits. Puria. A bed is called a puria. Sheparim v'ravin aleha. Wow. Of course, this puria v'ravin, people multiply upon it. Procreation. Bar zinka. If you have a dried out water pit, it's called a zinka. Bar zenaki. So I guess the nun of zinka refers to naki. Naki means empty. So this clean of water. Once contained water, now it no longer has water in it. Sudra. Which is a turban, is from the Pasuk in Tehillim, Sod Hashem Li Reov, because the Sudra was worn by the rabbis, and they were Yirei Shamayim. So the name of this head wrap is meant to be associated with the fear of God. And this Pasuk is used in many, many different places to explain how Chazal possessed knowledge of matters that logically they could not have any way of knowing. A padra, a palace, is a pischa den, to this door. In other words, the subjects of the king have to come through the door of the palace. Tana Rabbanan shlosha kolzman shemazikin mosifin gvura. Another natural phenomenon, three creatures that as they get older, they become stronger. Ve'eluhein, dag, ve'nachash, ve'chazir, the snake, the fish, and the pig. Most creatures weaken as they get older. These are the three exceptionals that get stronger as they grow older. The Mishnah said, Shemen kidei losuch, ever katon. The minimum amount of oil for hotzah is the amount that it would take to anoint a small limb of the body. Amri de Beir Avyanai, Shemen Kedei Losuch Ever Katan Shal Katan Ben Yomo. We only need the minimum amount of oil to anoint a small limb of a newborn babe. And that means one of the joints of a little finger of a day-old infant. Meisvei, the Gemara objects. The Braisa says, Shemen Kedei Losuch Ever Katan V'Katan Ben Yomo. It says, Katan V'Katan Ben Yomo. My love, Ever Katan De Gadol, the Ever Gadol Shel Katan. Shel Katan Ben Yomo. It would seem from the simple reading of this Braisa that the minimum shear of oil is enough to anoint a small limb of an adult or a large limb of a day-old infant. And these are the same, a small limb of a guttle and a day-old infant. So the Braisa means that the minimum shear you could do either by measuring a small limb of a grown person or measuring the large limb of a day-old infant. And here, Debei Rav Yanai said, Ever Katan Shel Katan. So Gemara says, Amri Loch, Debei Rav Yanai. If Debei Rav Yanai was here to answer, they would say, Lo. The Braisa is not the way you read it, but Hachi Kama. Here's what the Braisa means. Shemen, if he carries the Shemen, it's Kedei Losuch Ever Katan Shel Katan Ben Yomo. Lema Kitanoid, perhaps there are two shittas amongst Tanoim as to what an Ever Katan is. What does the Mishnah have in mind? The Braisa says, Shemen Kedei Losuch Ever Katan V'Katan Ben Yomo Divrei Rabbi Shimon Ben Elazar. So the amount of oil to anoint a small limb and a day-old infant. Rabbi Nosson Omer Kedei Losuch Ever Katan. Just to anoint a small limb. My la b'haka mifkli. Shouldn't we say that this is the machlokas Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Savar, Ever Katan Shel Katan, the small limb of an infant, probably a day old infant. Rabbi Nosson Savar, Ever Katan de Gadol, Ever Gadol de Katan. But I will Ever Katan Shel Katan ben Yom Lo. So the Gemara says, Lo, that's not how you have to interpret this Braisa. De Kuli Alma Ever Katan De Katan Ben Yomo, Lo. Both Shitas, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Nosson, agree that the small limb of a day-old infant is not enough to be Mechayev you for Tzos Shemen. Here we turn to Dafayin Ches. The lesser de Rabbi Yanai, we're rejecting Rabbi Yanai. Both Tanoim are rejecting Rabbi Hocha. What's the machlokes Hocha Mifli? Rabbi Shimon Elazar Savar Ever Katan De Gadol, the Ever Gadol De Katan Ben Yomo Ki Adadi Ninu. So you have the small limb of an adult and the large limb of a day old infant are alike, and as both require the identical amount of oil to be anointed. So one is therefore chayav if he carries either oil to anoint any of those two. But Rabbi Nosson Savar Ever Katan De Gadol in, but Ever Gadol De Katan Ben Yomo Lo, which means that according to Rabbi Nosson, it's not enough to have a large limb of an infant. You need a small limb of an adult. And as he holds that a small limb of an adult requires more oil than a larger limb of a day-old infant. So again, both Tanoim reject Rav Yanai. So Rav Nosson, when he says that it's enough to anoint a small limb, he's responding to Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon stated that the oil is sufficient to anoint either a small limb of an adult or the large limb of an infant. Rav Nosson says, no, he's only chayev if he carries the amount to anoint the small limb. The amount sufficient to anoint the large limb of an infant is not enough. Oh, even a large limb of an infant is smaller than a small limb of an adult. And he needs the small limb of an adult. My hafile, what's the final maskana in this regard? Toshma desanya, Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, Shemen kidei losuch, Ever katan shel katan ben yomo. Which means that according to Rabbi Shimon Elazar, it's enough oil to anoint a small limb of a day-old infant, which means that he reflects what we saw in the Bei Rav Yanai. So therefore the original interpretation of the Gemara is correct one, when the Gemara says, Lema Kitanoi. And it seems that we're going to accept the Shita of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, which is the Shita of the Bei Rav Yanai. And we're talking about a minimum measure enough to anoint a small limb of a day-old infant. Now the Mishnah says, Mayim kidei loshuf bahen es hakilar. Enough water to mix for an eye plaster. And Omar Abaye michti kol milse de shchicha velo shchicha. Also Rabbanu basa de shchicha lekula. Whenever you have a substance that has two usages, one is more common and the other is less common, then the Rabbanan follow the more common use, and that's how they determine the minimum shear, and sometimes that might end up in a kula. Again, we'll have to see exactly how it ends up in a kula. But shchicha u'shchicha, if you have two usages and they're both quite common, then also Rabbanu Basa the Shchicha L'Chumra. Then the Rabbanu will follow the common use that results in a Chumra. And we're going to see how Abaye demonstrates this from the Mishnah. So again, when we're talking about setting up the shear, the minimum shear for Chiyuv with respect to Hotzah, and the Chazal determine how much of each substance is necessary to perform the common function of that substance. If a substance has more than one use, we do not rule stringently and say that one is liable if he takes out even a smaller amount of the substance, as long as it sometimes is used for a function. I'm saying the Hava mean if it sometimes it's used for a function requiring a small amount, but no, that's not how Chazal go. They're going to be Mekil and they're going to say, let's fix the shear, the minimum shear, based on the requirement of the common usage of that substance when it's a larger amount, and that's called Lekula. But that only applies when you have one use that's common and one use that's not so common. If both uses are common, one of them requires small and one larger, then the Rabbanan go Lechumra. And the minimum shear is going to be that amount that's sufficient for the function that requires only a smaller amount. So, for example, yayin, shtiyaso shchicha, refuaso lo shchicha. Generally speaking, people drink wine. Sometimes its use is uncommonly for healing. It's also rabbanan basa shtiyaso de shchicha lekula. In other words, they're going to be mekil and go basar the shear of shtia, which is more shchiach. So, for example, you could use wine as kilar that we spoke before with the eye plaster. But that's uncommon. Most people will use less fancy liquids like water and so forth as a base for this sticky plaster for the eye. So the minimum amount of wine, we're talking about natural wine, the concentrated wine, that's significant enough for drinking, which means you can mix it in a cup 1/4 of revius to get a full revius by adding 3/4 of water, that's a larger amount that would be needed to mix eye plaster. So we're going to fix the minimum amount for hotzos yayin at 1/4 revius, and that's a kula because that's the most common usage for drinking. Cholov. We're going to find something similar with regard to milk. Achilaso shchicha refuaso lo shchicha. Generally speaking, you wouldn't use the milk to make that sav for the eye. And also rabbanan basar achilaso lekula. So we're going to use the kula and say that you're going to be chayev for a minimum shear of milk, enough to swallow, but that's a larger shear than you would necessarily need to mix the eye plaster. To mix the eye plaster, you would have a minimum of milk. But the Rabbanan weren't machmir, they said you're not chayev unless you take out the larger shear, because that's more common. Tvash, achilos shchicha, rufos shchicha. Here we have a case where both usages are equally common, whether you use honey for achilo, whether you use it for medical purposes, that's both common. Also, Rabbanan basa rufosa l'chumra. Here the Rabbanan are going to be machmir, and they're going to see the minimum amount, which is a smaller amount, that you need for refuah. So in these cases, the rule stated by Abaye explains how you determine the minimum amount, el mayim. However, this seems to be the exception to the rule. Mayim, michti, let's analyze mayim, shtiyaso shchicha, refuaso lo shchicha. Which means that you drink it commonly, but to use it for a fu and eye plaster, that's not very common. Again, that's the cheapest substance that you would use to make this eye plaster as a medical use, but to use it medically in general is very rare. But people are always thirsty and they're always drinking water. And yet, the question is, my time also Rabbanan basa refuasa l'chumra. Here we're going to go l'chumra, and we're going to get a minimum share of water that's necessary to make this eye salve, even though it's not common. So that seems to undermine the principles of Abaye. Omer Abaye, Abaye defends it with two possible responses. Number one, Beglila Shanu. The Mishnah was addressing the inhabitants of the Galil, and they were consistently using water for healing purposes. It was very common in that place. They were very poor, and they would never use anything but water to mix their eye plasters. They couldn't afford to use more expensive liquids like milk or wine. So in the Galil, there are two uses of water that are considered or categorized as common, whether it's drinking or using it for medical purposes. So here the Rabbanan have to apply the Chumra, and they're going to fix the shear at the smaller amount, which is enough to use it for the eye plaster in the medical sense. Omar Rava said, Afilu Tema Bishar Makomos. Rava said that you can say that the Mishnah is referring to other places, not just Galil, because water is used commonly for healing purposes, the smaller amount, in many locations. Kiddush Shmuel, as Shmuel said, the Omer Shmuel, Kol Shakyone Masu Umetaltale Labar Mimaya, De Masu De Lo Metaltale. All liquids, when you mix it to make this eye plaster, will cure. But they cover the eye and they hinder sight. And the exception is water. Water will cover the eye, but it doesn't cover it will cure, but it doesn't cover the eye, and it doesn't hinder one's sight. And therefore, even outside of Galil, it's very, very common. Water is thin, and the plaster made with water is easily absorbed. Any excess is easily wiped away. It doesn't form a film on the eye, not impair a person's vision. Therefore, it's the best liquid of all the liquids to use in mixing eye plasters, and therefore the use of water for eye plasters for a fuah is considered common. And in a case of two common usages, in this case drinking or using it for a fuah, we take the chumra of the smaller shear. And we're up to Ushar Kol Amashkin Biravius. So let's make a note of where we got up to. We're on Daf Ayin Ches Amud Aleph. And I would say we are approximately halfway down. Let's just see. You know what? We'll just mention that we're up to the two dots of Shar Kol Mashkin Revius Tonra Bonon. So the first word in the line is Shar, Vashar. That's right in the middle of Daf Ayin Ches Amud Aleph.